Welcome back to React Native Radio Podcast. Brought to you by a squirrel holding three sticks, a carrot, and a Britney Spears album. Episode 214, React Native Android Native Components.
So Mazen, I'm hearing a rumor that you got some new wheels. Is that true?
Yes. Just the other day, I picked up, 6 months later, picked up a Tesla Model Y.
So you got a car attached to those wheels too then? Is what I'm hearing. Okay. That's a pretty good deal.
The wheels came first, and then 6 months later, the body came?
Pretty much. Now I'm waiting for the charger cable.
The charger cable, yeah.
You gotta
flip it over. Oh, no, it's not an Apple car. If it was an Apple car, you'd have to flip it over and plug it in.
True. Yes.
But that's cool. Have you, I'm sure you've driven it.
Yeah. Yesterday was the first day I took it on the highway and used the autopilot feature, which was pretty cool.
Mm.
Really nice how we've come from no cruise control to cruise control to adaptive cruise control to now pretty much driving you without having your hands on the wheels.
Right. Does it make you nervous at all, or you feel pretty secure?
I felt pretty secure. There was a point when the lane actually ended and it merged. Safely, there was a car. It slowed down, waited for the car to pass, and kind of moved in.
No way.
So that was pretty cool.
That sounds scary.
Yeah.
It does. I would have been like, okay, I'm taking over, dude.
Yeah. I mean, I did have my hand on the wheels the whole time.
Right.
But you kind of you get to see the wheel turning and doing all that stuff.
Yeah.
I did feel safe when on a more steep turn, it did slow down and make that turn. Not significantly. Like, you know, it dropped maybe like 5 miles per hour to make that turn, which I thought was pretty cool. But I am interested to try it on a larger interstate, so I-40 or 95, which are close to me, or 85.
Yeah.
And see there's apparently in beta, a auto lane change. So that'll be interesting to see how that works. In beta, so shows you how much trust you might have in software right there.
Wow.
I'm not using a beta software while driving.
Yeah, it keeps getting better. Obviously, it's not there yet for fully self-driving and whatnot. But, you give it a bunch of years. And I assume, obviously, there will be some setbacks along the way. It's just like airplanes, right? Like airplanes were considered kind of unsafe at first. And over time, they just worked at it really hard. Eventually got it there.
Yeah. And you kind of have to have your hands on the wheel when using autopilot or full self-driving if you have it. And you're kind of required to just tilt the wheel a little bit just to show that you're attentive and you're actually present while you're driving. And if you don't, it'll actually like lock you out from using autopilot and lane assist during that trip. You kind of have to like get off the highway, park, turn off the car, turn it back on, and then you have access to it again.
Wow. It like punishes you. It's like, hey.
Yeah. Yeah. It has like a, I think it's a.
Don't make me pull this car over.
Yeah. It's like a 3-strike system. If you don't use it, it'll actually put on your hazards and come to a full stop. You should check out the YouTube. Some people have done it on an interstate. I would never do that.
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
But had the car come to a full stop with their hazards on pretty much the car punishing them on the highway.
Oh, my. Our robot overlords are already here. And unfortunately, they're kind of right in this situation. So we can't really argue, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
John Major, do you have any auto-related updates of your own?
I got my license plates back. So there's definitely some progress happening on my side. My F-250 has been ordered. So
wait, yeah. What?
My F-250 has been ordered. So I've stepped it up quite a bit from F-150 to F-250.
Didn't you just buy an F-150?
I did, but the whole process of taking the truck back led me to just ordering a F-250 2022. So it's on order and hopefully should be here within, I'd say, probably like the next month or so.
Is that right? I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, everybody's getting new vehicles except for me. This is a sign. I guess I need a new one. Well, that's pretty exciting. F-250, mm-hmm. That's a lot of truck.
Yeah.
But, you know, you live in Wisconsin, so, you know, the snow's coming. You're going to need the power, hey?
Oh, yeah. And take it out back and rip it around.
Sounds fun.
You just got to.
Same tow package?
Oh, no, bigger tow package.
There you go.
Yeah.
I guess I should do intros. I'm Jamin Holmgren, your host and friendly CTO of Infinite Red. I'm joined by my splendid co-hosts, John Major and Mazen. John Major is a senior software engineer here at Infinite Red. He lives in Janesville, Wisconsin, and is also the editor-in-chief of the React Native newsletter. We have Mazen Chami. He is a senior software engineer, also former pro soccer player and coach. He lives in Durham, North Carolina, and is also here at Infinite Red. We're going to talk about React Native here a little bit. And we're going to interrupt this automobile-themed podcast to talk a little tech. Before we do that, this episode is sponsored by Infinite Red. Infinite Red is a premier React Native design and development agency located fully remote in the US and Canada, including in rural areas where you need F-250s and Jeep Wranglers, and a few places you could use a Tesla. If you're looking for React Native expertise with your next React Native project, hit us up. You can learn more on our website, infinite.red/react-native, and don't forget to mention that you heard about us through the React Native Radio podcast. Also, imagine working with us. Obviously, very cool people, all of us. I mean, wouldn't you say that, John Major? We're cool, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We're cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
If you're a senior level React Native engineer located in the US or Canada, go to careers.infinite.red. All right, let's get to our topic for today. We're going to talk about React Native Android native components. So this is kind of an interesting topic, and I actually just recently did a React Native live stream on Twitch where I implemented a React Native Android native component from scratch, like totally from scratch in a brand new Ignite app. You could do it with a non-Ignite app as well. I just happened to like using Ignite, but yeah, I spent actually two episodes on that because it was there was actually, I don't know, I ran into a lot of problems with the documentation and stuff. So I'm really interested to talk about this. I used to do native development, so it's something that I guess is a little more near and dear to my heart. First thing I want to ask is why you would want to build a native component. I have my answers for that, but sort of, I guess I'll ask Mazen to start with. Why do you think someone would even want to? I mean, isn't the whole point of React Native to use JavaScript and not have to drop into Java or, you know, anything else?
You know, nowadays there's a lot of different libraries out there that accomplish the native side of things. But if there's something that you can't find out there and you might need to dive in, whether it's, you know, improving performance of a certain library or building your own library. I know that's, you know, there's the conversation between components and modules here, but mm-hmm. you know, essentially you'd have to create a component at the end of the day. So if you have to dive in, then you have to kind of go in and understand native code and build something specific for your project, I feel like, most of the time.
And also to mention that sometimes modules go out of date, maintainers drop off. So someone has to take the wheel and either update it as time goes on, and then, as you said, improve the performance and so forth.
Yeah, and I have a good example of that. I was working on a project that required a React Native Health Kit integration. And for example, there were a couple of PRs that weren't merged in. So I pretty much forked that project, went into native code, did the changes that I had to do, made sure that, you know, the quote unquote API to the front end from the module and the component were all set. That way I could then access the specific piece. It was workouts, I believe. So that was, like, you know, a certain example.
So let's take a moment and actually talk about what the difference is between an Android native module versus Android native component. What's the difference between the two?
And I know component is pretty much, you know, if you were to think of it as like a web view where, you know, potentially props are being passed in to display a name or a specific piece of text. So mm-hmm. and the one that really comes to mind, and I think we'll touch on this later, is just a simple web view that has a text view that says welcome prop, prop.name, prop.title, whatever that is. And then, you know, on the JS side, once you link to it, you can kind of have welcome friends, welcome happy people, whatever the case is.
Yeah.
And as far as a module goes, I would probably say this is when you're kind of linking into actual native code, whether it's HealthKit related or background specific items, whatever it is that you would have to pull from, say, permissions that require permissions, you could kind of go down that route.
And then when you say linking into native code, I would also assume then that would be exposing that native code to the JavaScript side as well.
Correct.
Right?
Via the term bridge. You would have to have a React Native bridge.
I just think of it as like a component is basically like a React component, but on the native side. And it would be exposed by a React component. And then a module, yeah, like Mazen said, is more kind of your non-component functionality. So it might be an SDK that you need to call and have it do something or whatever. They definitely go hand in hand, and there are a lot of things that are very similar between the two. So learning them both is a good idea. But it is good to kind of know the difference between what a module is and what a component is.
So, Jamin, how important would you say as a seasoned React developer is it to know React Native, or not to know React Native, but to know native code?
To know native code, yeah. Well, I'm going to turn that around on you. You've been working with us, John Major, for, I don't know, something like 9 months. And in that time, you've been doing nothing but React Native the whole time. So how often have you had to drop down in all of your projects that you've worked on in this time into native code?
Just very recently, I'd say. And that's just reading native code.
Yeah. You haven't written any, and you've read some just recently.
Correct.
So I think that answers a lot of it. Mazen, how about you? You mentioned you did do that more recently.
Yeah, twice. Once for the HealthKit package that I mentioned, and another time to set up actually a blog, which we'll discuss later.
Yeah. And so like for me, I don't code every day on client projects, so it's not quite as relevant. But I do think that you can have a pretty solid impact on a React Native team without ever touching native code. Now, knowing native code gives you another dimension to what you're doing. It's sort of like a backend developer knowing Ruby and Rails, but not knowing SQL. Well, if you know SQL, then you can like add another dimension to what you do, and you can, you know, start building integrations with databases and stuff. That's kind of how I see it.
Building on that question, Jamin, do you think you can have a seasoned senior React Native developer who has never gone into native code?
I think it'd be pretty rare, although actually in the early days, I don't think it was possible at all. I think now it's a little more possible because you can specialize in other things, like, you know, there are other pieces, but ultimately, at the end of the day, I do think that it is part of the toolkit of a senior React Native developer. It's something that you should probably learn. It's not that bad. I mean, honestly, you could go watch me work on it on Twitch and you know, kind of actually, I put it up on our YouTube channel, too. You can just watch those. We'll put in the show notes, but you can watch those episodes. It's like, I don't know, 4 hours-ish, which sounds like a lot, right? But you're going to watch me go through this whole process. And at the end of it, you're not going to be as like intimidated by this. It really won't be as intimidating. And I have one for iOS as well, which we're going to do an iOS episode of this podcast. So yeah, to answer your question, I do think it is a piece of that. It is something that as you get deeper into it, but that's okay. Like you can be a senior level. I mean, John Major is a senior level developer. So is Mazen. They're not necessarily in this all the time. And that's okay. Like they're able to do their jobs. They're doing great. The clients are happy. It's really more about expanding your toolkit. So I think, John Major, you mentioned that you could like find an outdated library and then go in there and update it. I think that's actually a pretty big, that will happen, especially as, you know, libraries start aging out a little bit here and there and being able to do that. For me, that's been the primary place where I have done native code because I have been one of the maintainers and I was the original extractor of React Native WebView. And so because of that, I needed to really get into the native part of it and the bridge and whatnot. So there were pieces there. Open source maintainers obviously are in a little different area. But if you want to contribute, you know, to React Native WebView, you're going to need to know some of that stuff.
Yeah, and just kind of adding on to all this, you mentioned, Jamin, at the beginning, you almost, as a React Native developer at the beginning, you couldn't not know native code. Now with, you know, the vast number of different packages that we have out there that do the native part for you, it's almost easier to not have to jump into native code as much these days. But yes, like you said, always good to have that in your toolkit. Just kind of adds that extra level of understanding of what's happening under the hood.
And let's be honest, if you want to look really smart, then you can just be like, yeah, I'm just going to build it in native. All right. Java versus Kotlin. I'm going to have to work a little harder. I think Robin laughs a little easier at my jokes than these guys do. But Java versus Kotlin. Let's talk about that. So I've only worked with Java. I have done very little with Kotlin, and I've done none in conjunction with React Native itself. Now, Mazen, you recently actually did some work with Kotlin. So let's, well, first off, let's talk about that. Java was the original language that, of course, Android uses internally, and React Native is written in Java. The React Native Android is written in Java. If you want to drop down into React Native Android native code, you're going to start with Java. But there is a new language called Kotlin, which Google has adopted. Looks very similar to Swift. It's a modern language. It has lots of modern features. It's a very cool language. And it would actually replace Java, and you can actually code in it instead of Java. So Mazen, you've done some work in it recently. Sort of like, what did you end up doing, and what were your impressions?
I felt like Kotlin was a little bit cleaner. I think a lot of the, for example, autofill, I don't remember that being available as heavily in Java, specifically Android mm-hmm. Studio. I think Kotlin did a better job of that. That might also be, you know, with the introduction of VS Code and TypeScript kind of filling out things, and we'll talk about it later with Swift. In addition to all that, I also felt like when you're typing things, there was less, what's the word I'm looking for? In Java, you always did a lot of like prep for your functions. So for example, if you're going to write a sample function, you'd have to do like at override protected function name return string. Now it's just override fun, which F-U-N, I guess function, the function name, and then it's return type. And then you just kind of, return it. So it's much closer to TypeScript, I would say, obviously with a little bit of the syntax differences, but a little bit closer to the way we do things in TypeScript.
Yeah, and that's sort of been my impression when I've looked at it in the past as well, that it's a very clean, nice, modern language in a lot of ways. So would you say it's like a better language than Java?
In my opinion, yes. I think it's probably also easier to learn for newbies than having to go through Java. I think Java is has a high bar of learning at first, as far as kind of these languages go. I think Kotlin's cleaner and easier to read. So yeah, and like I said, similar to TypeScript, so it makes it very easy to kind of just read it if you're coming in fresh.
And my last question, though, this one's where the rubber meets the road. Is it better for React Native?
That's a great question. I think React Native right now only ships with Java, so transitioning mm-hmm. your project to Kotlin, which is what I did in this blog post that's coming out soon, mm-hmm. is it worth it? I would say not necessarily. At the end of the day, if you were to, create either an Ignite project or React Native app, and you were to go dive into your actual native code and convert it to Kotlin, all you're really doing is just kind of adding in the Kotlin layer on top. So I do believe it's still Java under the hood at the end of the day. So performance-wise, I don't think you'll see that big of a dip in performance, but it's going to add that extra time and effort to get you there. So if you're not going to be diving into the native code as often, I would say it's not necessarily worth it to do the conversion. I do think maybe create React Native app, that could probably give you a flag to say whether you want it in Kotlin versus Java. Mm.
Mm-hmm. And now if you are a Kotlin developer, most definitely, then I'd say convert it to Kotlin. Best choice for anything, in my opinion, is to use what you know. So be that Java, Kotlin, what have you, use what you know.
Totally.
That's a great point. I think you're right. And really my approach to it has been Java's fine. It's not as good, but it's fine. And the fact that you don't have to set up a different like build pipeline and whatnot means that you're going to have less trouble, just kind of stick with what's standard. But I do agree with John Major that like when you know the language, Kotlin, like do it. Yeah, just go ahead and set that up and go forward from there. It would be kind of interesting to do the work to set up Ignite's boilerplate with Kotlin, maybe the next version of it, so that that's not an issue. Like as soon as you drop in, you're already in Kotlin. You just start using it. And if all of that stuff's already set up, then there's just no problem. Like you don't have to think about it. There's not that extra hurdle. But from what I understand, Mazen, it was actually quite an effort on your end.
Yeah. Yeah. It did take me a lot of time. Now there isn't a lot of documentation out there for it, so a lot of it was trial and error, being that I'm not a Kotlin specific developer. I've read it kind of like John Major mentioned, because we're working on that same project. So I had that understanding of kind of diving into it and reading it. So it was a tough undertaking, I would say to convert just a simple create React Native app to Android took me just over like half a day. It was like, let's say, you know, just for a conversation, I started at like 9 a.m. I was done with it by like 2-ish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a quick aside, how nice were the Kotlin docs?
They were better than Java from what I've seen, just being able to compare them online, because that's kind of where I was for the most part. But what was actually very good, and Jimin, I'm interested, sorry, I didn't watch your Twitch stream, but I do remember Android Studio giving you a lot of help with as you're typing, and you can kind of hover over it and it'll give you direct pipeline into the documentation of that, what's it called, activity per se.
Yeah, it was really good. I was actually pretty impressed with Android Studio overall, and it gave me a lot of help as I went through it. There were a few situations where I got really confused, where things were not like showing up and stuff, but that was because I would forget to import things and whatnot. And generally speaking, I could do things like auto import stuff and whatnot. Yeah, at the end of the day, Android Studio was quite helpful. I think it has pretty solid Kotlin support too, though.
Yeah, the documentation pretty much showed up on like the right sidebar whenever I clicked for it. So
yeah,
you pretty much, you know, nowadays we talk about having the hundreds of tabs open with Stack Overflow and all that kind of stuff. I felt like I didn't have to leave Android Studio. Now, I did leave to kind of do like the deeper digging on like, you know, how do you do XYZ, just because that wasn't my familiarity. But as far as documentation goes, it was all just kind of isolated in that one spot, which was really nice.
So I have, of course, have an old-timey story or just point. I'll keep it very short. But one of the things, when I was learning to code when I was a teenager, I used QBasic. And of course, there was no such thing as the internet in the 90s. Well, there was the internet. We didn't have it, though, where I lived. And QBasic was the editor. What was kind of cool is like you could highlight a word and then hit F1, and it would just immediately, like the keyword, it would pop open the what they called online help back then. It was not online, but they just called it online because it was like available right there. And they had extensive documentation, examples, everything in there. So I learned all through my editor. I had no external books, websites, any of that. It was all through the editor. And so for me, that was like the way to learn back then. And, you know, these kids with their Stack Overflow these days. But yeah, let's move on.
Stack Overflow is the best.
Oh, yeah. Can't live without it. I have a question for both of you. What about Fabric and Turbo modules?
Yeah, so that's a great question, John Major. I think that one of the big things there is this is like they are supposed to help like replace a lot of this, and you'll be programming in like C++ instead of the other native code, and it replaces the bridge, which is a big deal. We're going to be talking about those in a future episode for sure, and I can't wait to get into it because that's going to be a really fun topic. But one thing that's cool is all of the stuff in this episode should still apply even after the new architecture comes out, because it should be backwards compatible from what I understand. Otherwise, it would like invalidate all of these like third-party libraries that have already been built and nobody wants to rebuild in C++. So like, I guess the next thing we should talk about is what's involved in, let's say you want to build an Android native component. Like, what does it even feel like? What are you doing when you do this? Are you in VS Code? We talked about Android Studio. Like, what language are you writing in? How much JavaScript is involved? Like, what about all that?
Yeah, so you definitely need Android Studio. It would also depend on, there's a lot of environment specific things. So like Gradle and current SDK that you're on. I know Infinite Red has a very good setting up of your environment, which is good to follow. And I feel like I follow that every single time I'm setting up my environment. You also need to have an understanding at least of how to write the native code. So whether it's Java or Kotlin, so mainly Java at this point, if you're not converting your project, you need to also probably have the documentation available easily for you to take a look at that. Yeah. And just another thing too, React Native documentation does have a link to how to do native modules and or components. I'm not 100% sure. It is very hard. It's very slim, I guess I would say. So probably not the source to go through, but you can kind of have a basic understanding at that point.
Yeah. And of course, like we talked about, you'll probably be writing Java code and you may be writing Kotlin, but most likely Java. Yeah. And the documentation for setting up an Android native component is actually pretty poor. And it was something that I really ran into a lot of problems with during my stream. You know, I did let Rachel Neighbors, who's in charge of documentation at Facebook. And we actually did an episode with Rachel about her like documentation efforts on both React and React Native. And that's episode 178. So that's something we'll also link to in the show notes. But the big thing there is like, it was really painful because of the documentation has not yet been updated. And she mentioned that they do intend to work on that. So that was one thing. There is a lot of help out there. You know, you can look through, you know, a lot of blog posts and whatnot. And like I said, my stream, I think the reason I keep mentioning it is because I had to do it. So I had to go through all of the steps and find the dead ends and everything for you. You do need patience. You need determination, some grit, some Finnish sisu, as I like to say. You know, it's something that is not necessarily super straightforward, but you can get there. You can definitely get there. And I do feel like once you're set up, it's not that bad. And I probably could do it much, much faster the second time around because I know the steps. And then like adding a second component's not a big deal at all. But generally what you're doing is you're building a view manager, and the view manager is going to provide a view, and you're actually going to create programmatically an Android view, and you can assign properties to it. You probably would not assign like layout or colors and stuff, at least background color, because those are going to be assigned by React Native once it's used in your actual React Native views. But you can do other things, and it doesn't have to be just a bare view. You know, you can do things like add a web view, anything that inherits from view, you can add. So like I was building an image view, and the image view, I could actually set the, you know, the image itself. I could actually download like a remote image and then set it. I even set up like event handlers for like clicks or taps. And then I did some animations. This is all in Native. And then what I exposed to the front end was just a basic component. Bowser image was what I called it because it was an image of Bowser. And I dropped it into my React Native JSX and it just showed up. And of course I had to style it in terms of like the layout, make sure that I had it the right size and stuff. But it behaved like any other view. And when I clicked on it, it would do the animation. It would also, I set up like the event emitter to JavaScript too. So I could actually tell it, hey, go tell JavaScript that this happened. And then that goes over the bridge, which Mazen mentioned, and arrives in your JavaScript. And now you've got like an onClick or an onPress handler, and you can do whatever you want on the JavaScript side. So there were some things to kind of wire it up between the two. But at the end of the day, you're just programming in Java and you're programming in JavaScript. And then once in a while, you have to send information back and forth.
That description you gave there was great, Jamin. And I think understanding that little piece right there of, you're pretty much building something that you could do in React Native at the end of the day, but understanding that kind of gives you that extra tool in your arsenal, because you do have that capability to go in and manipulate that view, whether, you know, you want the view to have specific style constraints. You could still pass in styles to it if you wanted to, but have it be like a tooltip or whatever the case may be, you can kind of always jump in there and do that for yourself. And I think at the end of the day, I remember when I finished the deep dive for the blog, I just remember like being really excited and kind of jumping around, pumping my fists.
Yeah, it really does give you like a real sense of accomplishment. Like the moment when it started working and I could click on it and the image would like fade and spin and do things like that all in Native, I was so pumped. It was just fun. And by the way, I'll add a link also to the repo that I made, and you can look through all of my commits as I was working on this and kind of see what it's all about. But yeah, I mean, like the feeling of accomplishment there. And then once you have that rolling, it doesn't feel that hard to then be like, you know, I need to add, like a drop shadow to this, but I want to do it not in React Native, I want to do it in Native. And you just Google it. You look like on Stack Overflow, just like you would Java, programmatic, Android. I usually use the word programmatic. Well, I do that more on the iOS side because there's more kind of drag and drop tools. So anyway, if you say Java, Android, drop shadow, you're going to find code that you can more or less copy and paste and drop it in there, and it does the thing. But going back to these view managers, just to give Pete, I know it's hard to kind of talk about code on a podcast. I'm going to give it a little bit of a shot here. I created a file, and one, One of the things that stands out when you're doing Android native code is how deep their view hierarchies are. I mean, their folder hierarchies are. Mm-hmm. You've got Android. These are all folders, okay? Android, app, source, main, Java, com, native integration, which was the name of my like app. And then finally, and I could have added more folders if I wanted to, but finally, React Browser Manager .java. And then in there, we have a bunch of imports, and then there's a class. So think of class components. If you've worked with class components in React, kind of similar. Public class, React Browser Manager extends Simple View Manager. Simple View Manager is something that's provided by React Native, and it allows you to basically build these view managers. And then inside of that class, there's a string that you have to give it to identify it to React Native's JavaScript side. So you just provide this string and in classic Java fashion, you've got all these words in front of it. Public static final string is sort of like saying const. Public static final string. It actually means more than that, obviously. It's React underscore class, and then you tell it what it is. Usually by convention, you put like RCT in front of it or something. RCT Bowser view is what I did. And then you have a method called create view instance, which allows you to just create a new view and then return it. And so I did some other setup there, like set on touch listener was one of the things I did. But at the end of the method, you're just returning the view. And that view is then taken over by React Native and then manipulated using the style attributes and whatnot. And then I have a few other things, but that's pretty much all you need. Like you could just do that and return some view and then you're good to go. There are a few other things you need to do, including you create a package for your app, which in this case, the app is called Native Integration. It could be my app, pizza app, Jamin's app, whatever, package.java. And then from there, you do need to return all of the view managers that you've created. So if you have any like view managers, you have to register them there, create them like new React Browser Manager, and then return that. So that's pretty short. You can actually look at it in my example repo and see what I did. It's 27 lines of code for that file, and most of it's just like imports. So pretty straightforward in the end.
Yeah, and then from the React Native end of things, now that you have all that set up on Android, you'll just need to create a file. That's how we just like to do it. You know, for example, like you said, Bowser image.tsx, for example, and you're using from a function from React Native called require native component. And it's a function that takes a string and the string matches whatever your native view manager was that was created. That way you can now import Bowser image native.tsx and pass in the props that you need anywhere in your app, essentially. So that's how you're kind of linking, you're having JavaScript understand where this view manager is coming from so that you can then use it as you would a text, a button, or any other component in your app.
So I'm hearing a lot about code. And for someone who is very brand new to native modules and Android, what are some tools that can help someone like me also feel accomplished like you two?
No, that's a great question. And you certainly can do it manually like I did and like Mazen did. And I do recommend doing it just for the experience. But there are some tools that will help you do this kind of in a more... they'll kind of walk you through it, to be honest. I have not used any of these tools yet. I do plan to do it on some future streams on React Native Live. But one is called Create React Native Module. This will create either a module or a component, both on iOS and Android. Has a single command, and then it walks. It's like a walkthrough. It's like a wizard. It'll ask you in the terminal, you know, how to or what you want, and it has many questions. There's also React Native Module Init. I don't know exactly the difference between the two. I believe that one is more opinionated than the other. You're gonna have to look at both of them to see what they're about, and I'll know more about it later when I've had a chance to try them out. There's also one from, and by the way, that was by a developer named, let's see, he goes by Brody Bits. Let me see if I can, Chris Brody. So his name is Chris Brody, and he put that out there, and it's pretty solid. Also, our friends at CallStack put out one called React Native Builder Bob, which is kind of a cool name, Builder Bob. I don't know why they chose that name.
Well, but I'm guessing because of Bob the Builder. But
Bob the Builder, right?
Also the fact that they probably couldn't do Bob the Builder, so they settled on Builder Bob.
Builder Bob. Essentially, you can scaffold your React Native libraries, and that includes native code. So it's quite opinionated. It's like, this is how you should do it. And I haven't used it either, so I don't know exactly. But it looks good, and it's well supported, like all the things from CallStack are. So definitely check that one out as well as a potential way to get you set up. Now, it's not going to write your native code for you, but it'll get you set up, get ready, and then you can drop in there and do your thing. One thing that I should mention is that it supports Kotlin. So you can configure your project to use Kotlin right off the bat.
All right. So someone who's listening, I'm sure just like me, feels motivated now to go and create a native module in Android. What are some good places to learn or learn from?
Yeah. So I would not recommend at this time the official documentation. Normally, that's where I would start. You can go look at it for sure, but there's some missing stuff and it may confuse you a little more than, you know, than it doesn't. So I would recommend checking out, and we'll put in the show notes links to my React Native Live broadcast. There's a part one, part two. You can go look at them, watch it in high speed if you want or whatever, skip through. You can definitely look at that. And then Mazen and Gant Laborde are working on a React Native versus Native blog that will have a lot of this stuff built in. So Mazen, you want to talk about that?
So in this one, we talk about building your creating a project, React Native project in Kotlin and Swift, pretty much just a simple web view that says welcome and whatever name you pass into it. If you don't pass a name, it'll just say welcome on the screen. And I know Gant and Mark did put another blog out before called React Native versus Native that does Java versus Objective-C. Mm. So you can look at that blog right now if you want to stay in Java and Objective-C, but stay tuned on Twitter for part two.
Perfect. And Mark, of course, is Mark Rickert. He's been on the show before, another developer at Infinite Red. All right. Well, let's wrap up. Where can people find you, John Major?
At John Major C. Basically everywhere.
And Mazen?
At Mazen Chami.
And I'm at Jamin Holmgren. And you can find React Native Radio at React Native RDIO. As always, thanks to our producer and editor, I don't know who I was going to say.
I think you're going to say, I'm pretty sure it is me. You're welcome.
John does all the things. As always, thanks to our producer and editor, Todd Worth, our assistant editor and episode release coordinator, Ted.
Do we have a Ted?
No Ted.
What the heck?
Ted Lasso. That's
have you been
TV
watching
show.
A lot of Ted Lasso? Jamie?
Ted Lasso. Oh, Ted my Lasso's goodness. Our assistant editor. I haven't watched. No spoilers.
All right.
As always, thanks to our producer and editor, Todd Worth, our assistant editor and episode release coordinator, Jed Bartoski, our social media coordinator, Missy Warren, and our designer, Justin Husky. Thanks to our sponsor, Infinite Red. Check us out, infinite.red/React Native. Special thanks to all of you listening to today, and make sure that
we definitely need outtakes.
Oh, that was great.
A special thanks to all of you listening today. Make sure to subscribe. I can't do this. Subscribe. Okay. I'm doing the whole thing over.
All right. I think we need to interrupt Robin's leave of absence and bring her back.
A special thanks to all of you listening today. Make sure to subscribe on all the major podcasting platforms. We're just known as React Native Radio. Reminder, we're hiring careers.infinite.red, and we will see you all next time.
See ya.
Bye.